Your Central Minnesota Farm Report for a Saturday morning. I'm Chasm Radio Farm Director Joe Gill. Your report brought to you each week by Midsoda Manufacturing in Avon. Right off I-94, check them out for all their trailers, their skid steer attachments, snow buckets, grapples, yeah, trailer accessories, trailer repair, DOT inspections, and more, all at Midsoda Manufacturing. Well, we're going to touch on a few topics here this week on this week's report. First of all, we talk about fertilizer and the high fertilizer prices that many farmers are seeing right now. We check in fellow farm broadcaster Chad Smith joining us here this morning.
Fertilizer prices have risen as much as 300% in some areas, making 2022 preparations more difficult. Shelby Myers is an economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation. She says those skyrocketing prices are among the top concerns for farmers and ranchers.
All major nutrients that are used in the production of primary row crops in the U.S. have experienced, since September 2020, prices that are increased over 150%, 175%, even over 200% in some cases. And fertilizer is a global commodity, so it could be influenced by a lot of market factors. We had a lot of impacts from COVID-19 and the precautions that were put in place. We import a lot of our nutrient use in the U.S., and those can be influenced by global factors.
Supply chain disruptions and trade duties put in place are also contributing to the rapidly rising prices. With all the factors currently in place, Meyer says it might keep fertilizer prices higher through the spring of 2022, which would have a negative impact on agriculture.
With all these factors that we're taking into consideration, there are expectations that fertilizer prices are going to remain high through the springtime, which might compel some farmers to shift planted acres away from corn to other commodities that are getting fertilizer at a lower rate. What those expectations can be for retailers to say, hey, we have fertilizer available, but we may only have a certain percentage available, or we're not sure when the delivery date's going to be. We also have some tax implications that could be taken into account.
Myers says the challenge of high fertilizer prices won't be an easy one to fix.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of factors going on all at once, and that culmination is kind of coming into this understanding that this might be a wait-and-see experience for a lot of farmers, because we have to wait for supply and demand to rebalance and redistribute and catch up to itself. But some other things that our solution are addressing those import tariffs and having a need for tariff relief. If we can mitigate some of those direct applied price increases and find ways to address the immediate impact to farmers' bottom line, that will be really helpful.
Learn more on the Market Intel page at fb.org. Chad Smith, Washington.
All right, Chad, thank you very much. In some other news, this past week, we had Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack visiting Wisconsin. Yeah, Bloomer, Wisconsin, to talk about the infrastructure bill. He talks about some of the priorities for getting things done.
Well, the priority is to get things done on time, on task, and on budget. And that improves every aspect of the infrastructure investment. We obviously want to expand access to high-speed internet to all corners of America in order for people to fully take advantage of this. Not just be able to say we've got broadband, but be able to make sure that it's usable. High upload and download speed so that it's actually meaningful for distance learning, for telemedicine, for business development, and for uses in the family home.
More from Vilsack. He says too many roads and bridges are overdue for repair.
We want to improve those roads and bridges. We want to fix those bridges. We want to improve the roads. Why? Because we want to be able to get people safely to their homes and their businesses from day to day. We want people to save time with a better transportation system, but we also want to be able to maintain the competitive edge that America has in ag exports, which is directly connected to the efficiency of our transportation system. That's why it's important not just to do roads and bridges, but also that lock and dam system.
Yeah, he comments the lock and dam system is just vital for U.S. agriculture.
If we can speed up the process of crops going down the Mississippi River, we're going to be able to sell those crops more competitively. We're going to sell more of those crops, and that's good for farmers.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack in Wisconsin this week, and more details regarding the lock and dam renovations. We get some more insight. Mike Steenhook with the Soy Transportation Coalition. He serves as the executive director. We get more details here this morning on your Central Minnesota Farm Report.
Mike Steenhook, Soy Transportation Coalition Executive Director, says Lock and Dam 25, about 45 minutes north of St. Louis, is the first project as part of the Navigation and Ecosystem Sustainability Program.
Because this project and other lock and dam projects have been lingering for so many years, a group of soybean organizations and corn organizations, including the United Soybean Board, have pooled some funding to offer $1 million to help underwrite some of the pre-engineering and design costs of this project moving forward. It's an important part of our supply chain, and we really want to see it move forward. And this is just a way for farmers to really convey the message that they want to remain the most competitive in the international marketplace.
Beyond United Soybean Board funding, additional organizations at the table include the Soy Transportation Coalition, Illinois Soybean Association, Iowa Soybean Association, Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council, Missouri Soybean Merchandising Council, and Iowa Corn Promotion Board. If approved for federal funding, Steenhook said the improvements will better serve U.S. exports for soybeans, corn, and other grains.
You would be creating a new, longer lock chamber that's 1,200 feet in length, and that can accommodate the larger barge flotillas or tows that are quite common on the upper Mississippi River. Because you're creating a second longer lock, that means you still have the original shorter lock. And so if something were to go awry at one of those two lock chambers, you have redundancy and resiliency that you can still allow transit to occur.
Additionally, the United Soybean Board supported research and analysis and design efforts to dredge the lower Mississippi River.
That's another project that the United Soybean Board and other soybean organizations really prioritized, and that's the deepening of the lower Mississippi River from 45 feet to 50 feet, working with stakeholders in Louisiana to really see that project achieve a green light. And so that dredging is occurring right now. We're seeing the first phase of it nearing completion. The second phase has already started, and that's the area that accounts for 60% of soybean exports. So if you make enhancements to that critical link in our supply chain, you as an industry become more profitable and more competitive.
To learn about key investments made on behalf of U.S. soybean farmers, sign up for the Soy Hopper newsletter at unitedsoybean.org/newsletter. And to keep up with the latest news from the Soy Transportation Coalition, visit soytransportation.org. Stay up to date with the checkoff on Wednesday mornings, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central on RFD-TV. Michael Clements reporting.
All right, Michael, thank you very much. Yes, indeed. A look at some infrastructure news. And finally this week, well, we're talking bison. The USDA's Farm Service Agency has responded to a request from the National Bison Association to find a new path of relief for bison producers affected by mycoplasma infection and mortality. Now, Dr. Jeff Martin, Director of Research for the Department of Animal Science at SDSU, Center of Excellence for Bison Studies, says the process has been a long time in the making.
Mycoplasma has been around for a little over 20 years and has been wreaking havoc on many livestock systems and wildlife systems that causes pneumonia in our large animals. It has been devastating lately, especially with what seems to be drought. And this year was a really bad drought year. And so in previous years, the USDA has made the determination that mycoplasma is a secondary infection in bison as it is in cattle.
Now, Martin says the current assumption is that bison are cattle, but
what we're finding is that mycoplasma does seem to be a primary infection in bison. That distinction is key for when it comes to livestock indemnity programs.
Now, USDA FSA Administrator Zach Ducheneau said in a release that the agency is looking at the program requirements for the Livestock Indemnity Program and for the Emergency Livestock Assistance Program in hopes that coverage can be provided for impacted bison producers.
We are cooperating with the USDA FSA. The FSA has requested that we share any data that we have in relation to known active cases for ranchers that have had mycoplasma and those that have happened over the last year that are no longer active but have run their course.
Now, Martin says they are just getting the research underway and drought is something they will research. So, yeah, pretty interesting all across the board this morning. And your Central Minnesota Farm Report, it's brought to you each week by Mid-Soda Manufacturing in Avon. Have a good weekend.